Josh, losing those jobs is the best thing that ever happened to us. We're free to pursue our destiny.
What, zombie takeout?
Negativity festers in you, man.
Welcome to episode 296 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's movie, which is from 1988, Tapeheads. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by security cameras, for all of your 1980s music video editing needs.
And also brought to you by Roscoe's. I'd eat the shit out of that right now if it were in my neighborhood. All right, so, man, this is a sort of a story that has been told before.
Yeah, and was told shortly thereafter, but we'll get to that.
It's been told thereafter. But we have two down on their luck. I guess they've been out of high school for 4 years now, and they just don't know what... They don't know what they're going to do with their lives, man. And they realize that the thing they should be doing is making music videos.
Because it was the 80s.
It was the 80s.
Was it the 80s.
Yeah, it was. Maybe if this took place a few years earlier, it would have been a lot more believable. Because,
yeah.
I mean, by 88, which is when this is movies going on, it was just so corporate. But anyway. And maybe it's probably what the idea was.
Yeah, it was written earlier than that, of course.
So, but rather than just a story about these two guys breaking it in the music business, there's also the subplot of this guy running for president who has a bit of a fetish and then was dumb enough to videotape himself practicing this fetish. And one of those tapes gets put into play, and he's trying to track it down and get it back before it gets blackmailed. Meanwhile, our two heroes are working, they're working for Spec, and then they are they luck into a few gigs, and then they meet their heroes. One of them is actual, Sam from Sam and Dave.
Yeah, there's Junior Walker, who is also pretty famous on his own, right?
Yeah. And they decide to... their thing is going to be bringing these two guys back into pop music. And they're going
hijacking a Menudo concert in the process.
Yes, hijack a Menudo concert.
With a gag that would never play today.
Really?
And it was actually factually inaccurate, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. So, right, the big concert goes down, there's a chase and a gunfight, and...
a big reveal about one character who was not who you thought she was.
Ah, you kind of did.
You knew she was someone important.
Right. Hilarity ensues. The manic pixie dream girl in this has a hidden secret.
Yes. And she really is the manic pixie dream girl in this
place. Oh, God, yes. Good God, yes.
Now, through a lot of this movie, I was thinking this really borrowed heavily, and I mean heavily, from UHF. It's basically UHF, but with music videos instead of a cable access channel. Right. And then I checked IMDb. This was released in 88. UHF was 89.
Yeah.
So I can't say UHF ripped it off.
I love Weird Al's cameo in this, by the way.
Say again?
I loved Weird Al's cameo in
this. And that actually was Weird Al. I checked the credits.
Of course. Well, at first, I wasn't sure when he was going in, but then when he came back out, it was definitely Weird Al. Yeah, you could tell from there.
So, I can't say that UHF ripped it off, but it's odd that they were so close. When there was, couldn't have been a direct influence, given how close they were.
They're similar stories, but of course, UHF was all about the gags.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this has a bit of that, but not nearly as much.
Yeah, this just parodied bands.
Mm-hmm. And a commercial, Roscoe's.
I'm not sure who the hair metal band was supposed to have been.
I don't know who they were supposed to be. They were Lords of the New Church.
Yeah.
That was Steve Bader, of course, fronting them, who I recognized immediately. Now, I think my favorite thing about the movie is the score.
Oh, of course.
It's Fishbone.
And I looked at the looked up the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Fishbone's only on one track, which is ridiculous.
Really? Oh, speaking of the soundtrack, since you brought it up, a bit of trivia. The film soundtrack, but not the soundtrack album, includes the song Repave America, written and performed by Tim Robbins, credited as Bob Roberts, 4 years before the movie was released, Bob Roberts.
He'd been doing that character, or going under that name at least, for a while, because I think he did something on SNL even before this, and he did it as Bob Roberts.
It was slightly altered for the movie Bob Roberts to retake America.
Yeah.
Also, with regard to the music trivia, the band Ranch Bone in the movie is played by real-life ska punk band Fishbone.
Of course it is.
Both Tim Robbins and John Cusack are huge fans of them in real life, and Robbins can be seen wearing a Fishbone t-shirt in a scene from Bull Durham, released earlier the same year. That scene killed me. Fishbone dressed as a country band in a country bar. Playing, I guess, as close to country as Fishbone gets.
Of course.
No, just rolling it back to the beginning. It looks surprisingly 50s at the beginning.
Yes.
Because we get this scene of, you know, this sort of, you know, helicopter shot of a cul-de-sac, and it kind of just has this kind of idyllic 50s look. And then we get these home movies over the opening credits that really reminded me of the Wonder Years.
Right.
So I've really was not prepared for what this movie was actually going to be.
I don't think I was either. I mean, I guess those home movies they were showing you, I mean, one of them had so much promise and was so talented and, you know, had all this pressure put on him, and he just folded as soon as, you know, they got out. Because, well, things just don't open right up for you.
That's the problem. When you naturally have abilities, you don't have to work for things.
Yeah.
And so then we get to, you know, real life, and or not real life, but the modern setting of the movie, you know, after the flashbacks. And you have these two security guards who decide to throw a party at their work, or one of them does. This was the first hint of what this movie was going to be.
And there were some cuts in the videos that he was editing that were almost straight from Beastie Boy videos.
Yeah, yeah. 'Cause they go to their security guard job. One of them just immediately switches the feeds on the cameras. And then suddenly about 20 people walk into wherever they're guarding and start partying. It was straight out of an 80s video.
Oh, definitely. Hope no bad people show up.
Yeah. Well, and then not just the Beastie Boys, obviously. But I think when the Beastie Boys did that, they were parodying it. You know, that was already a trope.
Yeah, yeah.
And they do that again later. At an even more inconvenient time. One of my titles was Music Video the Movie, which is what this really was.
Oh, definitely. And it was very much a love letter to the music video and the art of making the music video.
And Josh, the Tim Robbins character, was doing all of these editing tricks on the security camera console, you know, the camera bank, that could never have obviously been done on a security camera bank. You'd need like high-end software to actually pull that stuff off. Oh no, they didn't have software at the time. You'd need whatever, you know, editing gear they had at the time.
Right, and that's where, I mean, on one hand, it is a love letter to music videos. On the other hand, they make it seem like you really don't need a whole lot to put one together.
Yeah. Well, that was the dream of the 80s. It was, you know, anybody can pull off, you know, their dream with minimal gear.
Right.
You know, there are 180s movies, but that same lie. And the other thing that was really 80s about it was the just the way it kind of oversold boring times, where you can just have a party at the most boring of times, reminded me a lot of The Breakfast Club in that sense.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking more, this is very similar to The Blues Brothers in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that whole ending scene with, instead of having the Blues Brothers, you actually had, you know, as close to Sam and Dave as one could get.
Mm.
Which, you know, the Blues Brothers were, you know, modeled after.
Yeah, and with the hitmen chasing them through the whole thing.
Exactly.
And who was the guy in the blue suit with the big hair and glasses at the video awards? Because they kept going back to him, and I know I should have recognized him. I'm assuming he was somebody famous at the time.
The guy with what?
There was a guy in the crowd with a blue suit, glasses, and big hair who they kept going back to for reaction shots.
I mean, was he just the metal fan who...
Okay, I thought he was somebody famous. He was some kind of cameo who I just didn't recognize.
Well, they had a ton of cameos in this.
True.
Some great cameos, too, when you think about it.
Now, I do have a couple of nitpicks, and it's two very minor nitpicks.
Sure.
At one point, they're talking about, well, as they say in the movie, Yo-Yo Moss.
Did they say Yo-Yo Moss?
He said Moss. It's Yo-Yo Ma. He's a famous cellist.
He wasn't really that famous back then, actually.
That's true. He really didn't get big until the 90s.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised to even hear his name.
Which could explain the mispronunciation.
Yeah.
He wasn't that well known.
But I didn't... I thought he'd said Ma.
I rolled it back to make sure. Now, the Roscoe scene has, well, as far as moments in the movie, one of my favorites, or at least favorite references. It completely bites off of Better Off Dead.
Well, right.
When the chicken and waffles start coming alive.
Well, wasn't that One Crazy Summer?
Was it One Crazy Summer or Better Off Dead? They're effectively sequels. But I'm pretty sure it was Better Off Dead where the fast food comes alive and does everybody want some.
Oh, I thought that was One Crazy Summer, but maybe you're right.
Either way, it's a John Cusack movie of that era. You know, one of those two connected movies. Are they actually connected, or is it just everybody just think they are?
I think they're just so similar that everyone assumes they're connected.
But I love that reference because I love Better Off Dead. Another thing I loved was the Cube Squared video.
Oh, yeah.
They get a job on spec. On spec basically means for free for exposure.
Yeah.
I loved that they actually included that because it's not a term that most people know.
Yeah.
And so they get this group called Cube Squared, this Swedish synth pop group who the head of the record company, who looked very familiar, but I couldn't place him.
The actors, I'm not sure, but the music behind them was Devo.
Oh, nice.
but the head of, it's Swedish.
But the head of the record company who gave them the job said that this band had sold more records in Sweden than ABBA. They turn out to be this insane Swedish synthpop group who sing in Swedish. And the video is just Josh and Ivan, Cusack and Robin's characters, dumping paint on them and using this giant fan to blow feathers at them, and then glitter gets involved, and suddenly their synths just explode.
Well, they did something with, like, sparklers.
Yeah. They rigged them with, like, sparklers or firecrackers or something. So, big fire. And they're all covered in glitter and paint and feathers. Loved that scene. Because I remember bands like that at the time, and they were just so ridiculously serious for what they were.
Oh, yeah.
So it was great to see the piss taken out of one so thoroughly.
The mullets, the long coats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They actually looked a little hair metal.
No, they, hair metal themselves by that time.
Well, by 88 was kind of on the way down, but...
Oh, yeah.
I also really liked that the movie was willing to go to some places that I didn't expect. Like the video will.
Oh, at the...
Merlin? Oh. They get a job to film this video will, and after a few too many takes, the guy leaving the will passes away. So they go total Weekend at Bernie's on them and, like, put sunglasses on him and, like, move his mouth to actually get the will filmed. Didn't expect them to get paid. Yeah. Didn't expect them to go there. Or the scene when they get to the party, to the gala, and they open the wrong door and see one woman riding another one, like a horse, and saying, right. Let the prince pick me. They went full on BDSM in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was not ready for that.
The tape itself with the Christmas yeah, lights yeah. and everything. By the way, uncredited was mm-hmm. Courtney Love.
Oh, wow.
Was one of the spankers.
Oh, I actually do remember seeing that. I forgot to put it in my notes because I read it before I saw the movie, and so I didn't get the significance. I also really loved the Skylab reference.
Of course you would.
Well, yeah. I think I've told my Skylab joke story on here with ID, reference to ID4. Yeah, we've reviewed ID4, so I had to have told it.
Yes.
The band Blender Children, who did the video earlier in the movie, they were killed when a piece of Skylab 14 crashed into the venue they were playing at. Skylab 14. I know, again, most of our audience is about our age, but for those who are might be a little too young to remember, Skylab was kind of America's first attempt at a space station. Or was it just America? Yeah, because the Russians had one up earlier. I was actually just watching something about the history of Skylab.
Oh, yeah?
There was one Skylab that was up there for like 5 years. And it crashed. There was no Skylab 2, let alone a Skylab 14. So I fucking love that gag. I guess in 88, people would have gotten it a bit better.
Yeah.
Than anybody now. I mean, I'm
only talking like 5-6 years after the fact.
Yeah, yeah, true. It was the early 80s. Actually, it might have been the late 70s.
That but I'm as thinking we about saw it. Cannibal Women, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Jokes had a longer shelf life back then, apparently.
Well, yeah. And I don't remember seeing when this was written. It didn't seem quite as ridiculously obviously earlier as Cannibal Woman.
Which is funny, because wasn't this written before it? Yet it seems it wasn't going as far back as
right.
Cannibal Woman.
Right.
But anyway, this was a lot more focused of a movie.
Mm. One thing that threw me off a little bit about the movie, though, is they kind of randomly jumped back and forth between ridiculous and realistic.
Yeah.
Like, if it was just full-on ridiculous, there are no rules, I'd have been cool with that. But sometimes there were no rules, sometimes there were. Like, the scene in the car where they just kind of reach out of frame and grab beers. It's just a blatant, this is a movie, you know, gag. It's like running out of money in Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah.
But it was out of nowhere. Also, the fight between the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. I can't think of the character's name.
Belinda
and the music journalist. Where they're just arguing and suddenly one of them pulls out nunchucks and the other pulls out a butterfly knife.
Right.
And there was no build up to it. They just suddenly, there are these weapons.
Yeah. Kung Fu girl fight.
Mm-hmm. It just I like that sort of thing. It was just a bit too random for me.
I think my problem is a lot of this had been just done so many times already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just the whole, yeah, and then we're going to end it with a great concert and everyone's going to have a good time. And
get crazy, anyone?
Yeah. Well, think about it. Get crazy. Wasn't that like 8 years before this?
Yeah, I think that was 70s. Pretty sure.
That was like going into 1980, 81 kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think, because Get Crazy was all talking about what the 80s were going to be like, man. Mm. And it was just, God, you bastards have no idea what you're in for.
Although it could have been worse, I suspect. It was set to be released by the De Laurentiis Entertainment Group. But was picked up by Avenue Pictures due to De Laurentiis Entertainment Group's bankruptcy.
Well, honestly, if it was kept with that production group and it was already made and it was the same film.
Oh, yeah, true. I just pictured De Laurentiis trying to add some like faux Conan stuff in there because that's kind of what they did.
It would have at least been marketed more.
True, true.
Because, I mean, the problem with this one is just it was never marketed.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being the pickup from another studio, that, you know, they didn't have much invested in it, so they didn't really feel the need to make it all back.
Well, that's kind of why we're reviewing it. It kind of became a cult favorite after that.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's just because they're so a few things. I mean, yeah, there is an element of UHF in here that UHF definitely took, and that weirdness of grabbing the beers from off camera and of course Roscoe.
And the Jello Biafra reference.
Oh my god. That was one of the best cameos I've ever seen, I think.
Jello Biafra himself as an FBI agent.
Right. First off, I mean, Jello Biafra as an FBI agent alone is fucking hilarious. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then to have him actually say the line, if we did to Jello Biafra, it was bad.
Yeah. Especially since, I mean, it's 88. They were still kind of, I mean, they've never been that big. You kind of have to like the Dead Kennedys to know who he is.
Right.
But it even was more the case in 88, I'm sure. So that was a pure Easter egg for the punks.
They were just about done, I think, at that year. I think Bedtime for Democracy. I think that might have been 87.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned last week that the movie was kind of based on Mike Nesmith. I was wrong about that. I got a little confused. It was produced by Mike Nesmith.
That's an easy thing if it were about Nesmith, it would have been more about what happened in the 60s.
Actually, I was thinking it was about his early music video work in the early 80s. He was doing MTV before MTV.
Yeah.
It wasn't about him. As far as I know, it was produced by him. And he's briefly seen in the film as a bottled water delivery man. Completely missed it.
But, I mean, he was making videos.
Mm-hmm.
So you could easily say it may have been about him.
Yeah, yeah. Possibly.
Because after the Monkees, he probably had a lot of expectations about what he was going to do.
Oh, yeah. And he was kind of a pioneer. He's the one who actually did something relevant after the Monkees.
Right. But it was a long time between the Monkees and MTV. Right.
Mm-hmm. It took him a while to kind of get to the right idea, I guess. I'm done with my notes.
I love the Georgia Satellites reference.
Georgia Satellites reference? That went completely over my head.
It wasn't even the usual hits. It was kind of snuck in there. That's when I realized it was the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Their second video that they did was actually for the Georgia Satellites, and the song was Open All Night.
Oh, wow. I don't think I know another Georgia Satellites song other than that first one.
That video of them getting close-ups of women from the neck down.
Oh, okay. That was a Georgia Satellite song. Okay.
That was a Georgia Satellite song.
All right. I just know that one song that everyone knows that I can't think of the name of right now.
It was just Keep Your Hands to Yourself.
Okay, yeah, that one. And really, just that guitar part after the title line is all I know.
Yeah.
Because that's all anybody knows. All right, on to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
Obviously, there's no room for a sequel because, they were successful. Well, there could have been. I mean, they did go to jail at the end.
Which is, again, very Blues Brothers.
Yeah. There could be room for a sequel. What about a remake?
Because, I mean, Tim Robbins was definitely doing, the Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm. True.
And John Cusack was definitely doing the John Belushi.
Mm-hmm. Actually, thinking of remakes, I forgot my other nitpick. The plan was to hijack a Menudo concert that was being broadcast around the world for Smoky Modes, which is a soul group with Sam Moore and Junior Walker that they were fixated on. They were going to put them on stage in place of Menudo. And the way they got rid of Menudo was to come up to their limo as they first got there and ask if they had their green cards. First off, I don't think you could get away with that gag today.
No.
Secondly, and I checked this before we started recording, Menudo are from Puerto Rico.
Ooh, snap.
They wouldn't have needed green cards.
Wow.
I wanted to make sure of that. Either way, it would have been inaccurate. I didn't know where they were from. I knew it was a Spanish-speaking country, so to speak, but I wasn't sure which
South
one.
South America. No kidding. Puerto Rico, huh?
I thought maybe Mexico, in which case green cards wouldn't have been relevant. It would have been work visas.
Yeah.
But I saw Puerto Rico, and they wouldn't have needed either, because it's been a territory since the late 1800s.
Yeah.
So I just, got to nitpick that a little bit. Anyway, can't see a remake being done. It's too after the fact, unless you update it. Wait.
It's of its time.
What if you update it and do instead of music videos, YouTube?
I don't know. Does it really have the same
thing? No.
Yeah, because that's one thing that music videos were actually at one point a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, stuff on YouTube becomes a big deal after, you know, it racks up views, but...
And there's actually a real life case of a very similar story. Two actually very successful YouTubers, Rhett and Link, they started off doing local commercials.
Huh.
And now they've got, you know, comedy shows and music videos, you know, comedy videos.
What about two podcasters that do a movie review podcast? Yeah.
So there's actually been like a real life version of this with Rhett and Link. So an update really doesn't work. All right, on to brains.
On to brains.
I overall really liked it, especially some of the subtler gags, like the Joe Biafra thing and, you know, some of the stuff that not everybody's going to get on spec.
So yeah.
I'm going to go 4.
I'm right there with you. I think if they didn't have Joe Biafra, I would not be putting it at 4.
Yeah, that bought it probably a half a brain easily.
It really did. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you've seen before. You've seen again. You'll see it again, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And
you saw it the next year in UHF?
Yeah.
All right, what have we learned?
I think it was just something I've that been reaffirmed. Fishbone is the most versatile band ever.
And I've learned that waffles are just pancakes with little squares on them. My favorite line from the Roscoe's ad. It was almost my sponsor.
Ah, love some chicken and waffles.
All right, so until next time, and we'll be reviewing Enter the Dragon... This is actually a big about face because it's starting an action trilogy with Mean Guns and Grindhouse before we get to 300, which is another big left turn. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. I think it's set ahead further than it's ever been. Over the weekend, I actually worked out everything through the end of the year, actually to our first movie of next year, which I guess we'll announce since it's there already.
If they want to look and see.
We always go big at the beginning of the year. We've done trilogies, upon trilogies. We've done 3 movies in one episode, which we're never doing again. Actually, we've done that twice. We're never doing it again. This is one movie, but it's probably going to be our most long-awaited review.
It's going to feel like 3 movies, I think.
Yeah, it's probably going to hurt like 3 movies.
Oh, yeah. And not in a good way.
First movie of next year, we're reviewing 50 Shades of Grey.
It hurts almost just hear you say it.
Right? Yeah, I almost couldn't say it.
Yeah.
But it's going to be worth it because that episode's going to be amazing, I'm sure. If you enjoy hearing us rip movies apart, you got to hear that one.
How many jokes are we going to make about The House of Pain?
Yeah. And anyway, well, let's just hope I don't have too many nitpicks. We've also got the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And, of course, the recommendations list. I had no idea going in because I'd never seen the movie, didn't really know anything about it. And I really wasn't sure, even going into recording, I didn't have anything in my notes for a rating.
This was a pretty... if it wasn't for Joe Biafra, this would not have made it onto the rec list.
Right. You can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can go spec yourself.
Please. 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Now that's production value. I've got goosebumps all over my back.
What's up? Welcome to What's up? What's up? Welcome to episode 296